produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, March 6th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Just join up with the talented volunteer activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. While you're at it, stop by our blog at stash.normal.org. You can check the links on all of our news stories, download our PodSafe music, read commentary from myself and other marijuana activists, and leave your comments in response. It's the cannabis community's online home at the blog only Normal can deliver, your daily audio stash at stash.normal.org. Today we take a look at race and the drug war in our conversation with civil rights attorney William Buckman. The drug war began as a means of demonizing and controlling minorities, and it continues to disproportionately affect people of color. Cannabis Carrie brings us some great music from an Italian band with a French name called Amelie, and the song Get High. And to conclude our look at race and the drug war, we talk to another civil rights attorney, Bill Rittenberg, on why a state's rights argument for medical marijuana worries some people from the South. We've got a lot to cover, so sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Denver's marijuana policy under review. Three times since 2005, Denver voters have said they don't want people arrested or prosecuted for carrying less than an ounce of marijuana. Wednesday, however, we learned police and prosecutors have not changed their policies. But that might be changing. The Marijuana Policy Review Panel is charged with implementing the city's latest marijuana ordinance. On Wednesday, it introduced a resolution recommending the city attorney's office no longer seek conviction for petty marijuana cases. The panel met at the Denver City and County Building, trying to find out why hundreds have been arrested since voters passed the three laws starting in 2005. Since 2004 through last year, arrests have continually climbed. This, even though voters said, starting in 2005, then again in 2006 and 2007, they wanted them to drop completely. Denver modeled its lowest law enforcement policy after Seattle, which had 125 arrests in 2006. That compares to Denver's, which is estimated to be about 1,400 arrests. The panel will vote on the resolution at its next meeting. It's tough for some of these drug warriors to give up, isn't it? Even when the people want them to. They're addicted to drug war. Let's hope our allies are successful in forcing Denver to obey the will of the people. And stay tuned next week. We'll be speaking with Mason DeVert of Safer in Denver, who spearheaded those three initiatives and sits on the Marijuana Policy Review Panel. Illinois Senate Committee okays plan to use marijuana. A state Senate committee took a step toward legalizing the use of medical marijuana on Wednesday, voting to let people with debilitating illnesses like AIDS or cancer use marijuana to ease their symptoms. Senator John Cullerton, a Democrat from Chicago, said the committee's 6-4 vote provides, quote, a glimmer of hope that the legislation eventually will pass the General Assembly. The legislation passed the Public Health Committee last year, but was voted down in the Senate. Quote, we expect that this is the type of bill which is a long battle, Cullerton said. This is about the patients. It's not about somebody abusing this law to illegally obtain marijuana, end quote. The bill, which would make Illinois the 13th state to pass a medical marijuana law, heads to the Senate for a full vote. The plan allows people with doctor's permission to receive a state registry card allowing up to 8 cannabis plants in their homes and 2.5 ounces of usable cannabis. The proposal also carries tougher penalties than current law on possession charges. Well, good luck to all the activists in Illinois who are trying to make that a reality, and we want to remind people to contact your legislators in the state of Illinois. You can get more information from Illinois Normal at illinoisnorml.org. Moses was trippin', says Israeli researcher. Jerusalem. High on Mount Sinai, Moses was on psychedelic drugs when he heard God deliver the Ten Commandments, an Israeli researcher claimed in a study published this week. Such mind-altering substances formed an integral part of the religious rites of Israelites in biblical times. Benny Shannon, a professor of cognitive psychology at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, wrote in the Time and Mind Journal of Philosophy, quote, the Bible says people see sounds, and that is a classic phenomenon, he said, citing the example of religious ceremonies in the Amazon in which drugs are used to induce people to, quote, see music. He mentioned his own experience when he used ayahuasca, the powerful psychotropic plant, during a religious ceremony in Brazil's Amazon rainforest in 1991. Quote, I experienced visions that had spiritual religious connotations, Shannon said. He said the psychedelic effects of ayahuasca were comparable to those produced by concoctions based on the bark of the acacia tree that is frequently mentioned in the Bible. Well, yes, and there's also a long-noted idea that Jesus may have used cannabis tops as part of the anointing oil used in ancient ceremonies. And then, of course, there's always Genesis 1:29 for all the rest of us. Well, if you believe that stuff, that is. Me, I just figure my body is mine, and so long as I hurt no one else, what I do with it is my own business and no one else's.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
All right, well, as we begin our conversation on race and the drug war, we turn to William Buckman, who is a civil rights defense attorney in New Jersey. And we were talking with Mr. Buckman about the phenomenon known as driving while brown or driving while black, this idea that the police, and this was a very famous story noted in New Jersey, that the police are using race as a reason to pull people over, otherwise known as racial profiling. Is that true, Mr. Buckman?
And of course there is the entire phenomenon of racial profiling where it has been proven, particularly in New Jersey and any number of and in other locales, that law enforcement or biased policing targets minorities for stop and search and arrest, and as such we get these skewed statistics based on whenever they find contraband. Sadly, those statistics are driven purely by stereotype. Particularly the DEA and Customs began training state and local law enforcement in the 80s and 90s to the notion that it is primarily Hispanics and blacks that are involved in the drug trade.
Yeah, the other way we see that this this training or this preconceived notion kicks in regarding minorities, people of color, I had pulled up this other statistic I'd seen that said that despite similar or equal rates of illegal drug use during pregnancy, African American women are 10 times more likely to be reported to child welfare agencies for prenatal drug use. And this
that's a fascinating phenomenon that particularly single women, poor women, single poor women, poor women of color, without their consent or even knowledge, are often tested when they go in to give birth in a hospital, whereas the traditional white couple will not be bothered or they won't conduct such tests. The greater absurdity of that approach is that, for instance, when we're talking about something as benign as marijuana, there's absolutely no evidence that marijuana use while a child is in utero or before delivery is in any way harmful. It's based purely on the supposition that since the substance is illegal, these people have to be, the government has to be very much involved in supervising these people's lives. I mean, you could, if you were to test for Xanax or Klonopin or Valium, you'd find plenty of affluent people delivering babies with substances like that, which are probably potentially more dangerous than marijuana. But we just don't do it, and we don't do it simply because of our cultural biases.
Absolutely. Yeah, we just reported on a story came out of Louisiana where an 18-year-old young mother was prosecuted for something like second-degree child endangerment for the baby turning up, you know, positive for marijuana in a urine test.
I've been involved in many such cases where women were being prosecuted because marijuana or cannabinoids have been found in their urine or blood when they've been delivering children. And there's no basis to show that it is endangerment. It could be a false positive. They could have simply been at a party. But there's absolutely, if anything, of the few studies that have been done, those studies have concluded that there's no indication of harm. Mm. And then, of course, we have this entire equal protection problem where, of course, it's only women who are being tested.
Of course.
The potential or the father can be present. He's not being tested. As I said before, other people are not, other classes of people aren't tested for any number of drugs that we know, if used in excess, could cause problems in an adult, even an overdose.
Mm. Well, let's go to another issue with probably the civil right, which is the franchise, the right to vote. And so many African Americans have lost their right to vote. According to this statistic, 1.4 million African American men have permanently lost their right to vote due to a felony conviction, even though they've served their sentences. Is New Jersey one of those states that does that?
Yes. And again, that is another aspect of our sad but very pernicious legacy of racism in this country. It's amazing, I mean, particularly in light of this recent prison study, we certainly incarcerate many more minorities percentage-wise or per capita now than we did during Jim Crow. Ironically or consciously or unconsciously, it has the it does have the effect of essentially disenfranchising entire blocks of people. And then if you take it one step further and you think about the falsely accused and the false convictions, such as in Jenna, what's going on in Jenna right now, or what happened in Tulia some years ago, it's hard to ignore the almost banal type of systemic way that we are disenfranchising minorities through the drug war. It has had just the most profound effects on the minority community. One of my, as an undergraduate in sociology, I've actually always been fascinated by why minority communities are not even more outraged than they are about this present state of affairs. I guess because so many people through propaganda have believed that the drug war somehow is designed to keep them safe, as opposed to realizing that the drug war has, in essence, stripped communities of some of its best and brightest and has disenfranchised many of these people forever.
Well, one of the things that happens with the propagandizing is we find from other social studies that that blacks oftentimes have some of the same negative stereotypes toward other blacks as sometimes white communities do regarding crime and the perception of crime in the neighborhoods.
Yeah. So unfortunately, minority communities are split on this, but when you look at the raw statistics, as this most recent study has shown us, and state-by-state studies show us, it is people of color that are targeted for arrest and prosecution. You know, it's funny, and the Jim Crow analogy in many ways is very apt, because when you look at the history of this country and the sad legacy of racism, minorities have always been prime suspects for police scrutiny, particularly when we talk about things such as racial profiling or walking along the street and being stopped and frisked or being on a bus or walking in a primarily white neighborhood. Minorities have always been suspect when they've been in transit, even after quote-unquote emancipation. you know, for almost until pretty much until the end of the 60s, minorities were suspect in transit because they had to be in the back of the bus or in certain cars, in certain parts of a train.
Yeah.
Now we've translated that into making them suspect if they're driving nice cars, if they're in the wrong neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's just a shame.
It has the impact of continuing disenfranchisement.
Yeah, that's what we're facing here in the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
Yeah.
We'll keep fighting against it, and we thank you, William Buckman, who's calling us on the phone from northern New Jersey. Did I get that?
Southern New Jersey.
Southern New Jersey. Oh, yes, I failed my geography
southern,
class.
Southern New Jersey, where our... Given our skewed sentencing laws, our de facto state slogan is arrive on vacation and leave on probation.
Well, we'll leave it at that. William, thank you for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash today.
Thanks a lot.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, it's Thursday on the Stash, and Cannabis Carrie's been globetrotting the sound waves for some smoker-friendly music. This band, Amelie, is an Italian band with a French name and a British-style pop sound. They couldn't get more continental unless Christopher Walken joined the band. I'm sure we'd get some great cowbell for that. Today's music hit is called Get High from their second album, Below. With a driving beat, it sounds a little bit like Radiohead meets Coldplay. For more information on this artist and all the others we play on our show, visit music.podshow.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org for links to the artist and downloads of the MP3. This is Amelie and their song, Get High. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Hey, my name is Dan Lynn. I'm the executive director of the Illinois chapter of Normal. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Normal Podcast.
All right, here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're proud to welcome back Bill Rittenberg, who's a criminal defense attorney specializing in civil rights, working in New Orleans, Louisiana. He's also a member of the Normal Legal Committee. Bill, welcome back to the Audio Stash.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we were talking the other day after we'd gotten off the air about civil rights and how the fight for medical marijuana sometimes overlaps that. And you wanted to mention something about, well, there's people oftentimes that call for states' rights to medical marijuana. And maybe some of the younger folks out there really don't understand what that whole states' rights claim, how that resonates down in the South. So maybe you could fill our listeners in on that.
Yes. Well, let me start by saying we're all friends. I'm obviously an advocate of medical marijuana being legalized and being used freely. Us old civil rights lawyers from the South, here are our friends in California and a few other states saying that there should be medical marijuana and that it's a state's rights issue. And that causes some of us old people to cringe because what we remember about civil rights is that was the excuse to have legalized slavery. Civil rights was the right of states to segregate and not allow African Americans to go to the same bathrooms or schools or public transportation as white Americans. The concern is that a constitutional principle should not be something that a state has a right to exercise. The constitutional principle should be the bottom line for all of the states. And those of us in more conservative states shouldn't be left out in the cold if it's a constitutional right or a civil right. And I believe the right to use marijuana medically, and in fact the right to use marijuana recreationally, should be protected by the constitutional right to privacy. And that should apply in every state, not just the states where there's a majority that wants it.
So then to turn to a states' rights argument then is dangerous from the idea that, if we're going to say a state has the right to eliminate one right for people, they could eliminate all rights for people.
That and the fact is that there's a minimum, the First Amendment gives us freedom of speech and freedom of religion. It shouldn't give us freedom of speech in California but not allow us freedom of speech in Louisiana. And the argument of states' rights for the medical right to marijuana basically states we in California want to have a constitutional right to use marijuana for medicine, and we don't care about the rest of the country. And it's understandable that they take that position, but the end result is the implication that in states with more conservative populations, they don't have that right. And let me underline one of the important things about the Bill of Rights is that it doesn't protect the rights of the majority. It protects the rights of the minority. And so once you start bringing in states' rights, you're saying the rights of the majority of the state trump the individual right to privacy, to smoke marijuana in the privacy of your home where you're not hurting anybody.
So in a sense, if we acknowledge California's right to have medical marijuana, on the flip side, we're kind of saying that states have the right to not grant medical marijuana.
Exactly. If you're talking about it as a states' rights issue, then states get to decide it. If you're talking about it as a minimal constitutional right principle that's protected by the U.S. Constitution, then it has to apply in all states, regardless of the majority. And a majority of this country probably wouldn't pass the Bill of Rights if it was put up for election today, but the whole point of it is it's supposed to protect us from the majority, not just give us the will of the majority.
Absolutely. Well, of course, you and I were in perfect agreement here about that all of the states should have the right to medical marijuana. It should
Sure.
be a federal right under, like you said, the privacy protections that... Well, now, speaking of the privacy protections, let's go to that. I know that a lot of what we consider as our privacy rights here in America were determined as kind of implied or un... what's the term? Oh, boy. I have to remember that term.
The prostate rights started with a case called Griswold versus Connecticut, which said that the marital bed was private and you couldn't arrest a doctor. Believe it or not, a doctor was arrested in the 60s for distributing a birth control device. And the Supreme Court said that the right to marital privacy protected that. That was extended in Roe versus Wade to say that a woman had a right to privacy over her body in deciding whether or not to get an abortion. But privacy rights are there by a thin thread. They only exist since the 60s. And the implication was that if it's not affecting the rest of society and it's your own personal preference, you should have a constitutional protection for that. And again, like I said, I want people to be able to use medical marijuana in California, but it should be a right that applies to every state.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, was with the privacy rights aren't directly outlined in the Constitution. They call them the unenumerated right to privacy under, what is it, the penumbra.
Well, the decision basically said it was implied by reading the First and the Third and Fourth and Fifth and Sixth and Seventh and Eighth Amendments together. Justice Douglas talked about the penumbra, which is a famous phrase where it's implied by reading the Bill of Rights. And it's hard to read that you have a right to free expression and you have a right to speech and you have a right to religion and you have a right against self-incrimination without implying that you have a right to privacy.
Absolutely.
And that's what they determined. And I think most Americans would be shocked to think that they didn't have a right to privacy. But again, like I say, if we go back to states' rights, then the states would decide what rights you had, and you wouldn't have the protection of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, and that's always been something that I've found interesting when we look at Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose, how we're talking about a citizen's right to control what they do with their body, with birth control, that they take that they have the right to take a certain kind of medicine under a doctor's supervision. And how is it that right to privacy isn't protecting the people that want to use medical marijuana? What are the feds using to trump that?
It's real. They're using very, very conservative judges that George W. Bush has helped appoint, along with his father and Ronald Reagan. It's really hard to imagine. I mean, all of the reasons the government gives for keeping marijuana as a non-medical use drug are just absurd. And they talk about it being an advertisement for people to use illegal drugs, but we give people morphine. We give people all kinds of incredibly dangerous drugs as legal medicine. The only difference I see on marijuana is not the legal-illegal issue, is that there's no pharmaceutical patent on marijuana, and so there's no drug company making billions of dollars selling it. And there's no incentive of any company to spend the multi-millions of dollars that are required to get the FDA to approve a drug as a legal drug for medical use. But other than that, I mean, the arguments are overwhelmingly in favor of allowing marijuana for medical use. And they're also overwhelmingly in favor of allowing marijuana to be decriminalized because... the only argument against decriminalizing marijuana that I know is that it would cause great unemployment of prison guards.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that, would we? Locking up less of our people. When America locks up more people per capita than any other country in the world.
Astounding, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we kill more. We have capital punishment. Only the most primitive of countries still have capital punishment.
Yeah, it's sad. And, the logic that they use here is just so tortured, when they're trying to withhold our rights to use marijuana, and they always come back to this Commerce Clause argument where they say, well, it affects interstate commerce, even though in the case of medical marijuana, many times it's never bought, it's never sold, it's always done within the state. So it seems like a tough argument to make to me, but we're about out of time here for our interview, so I do want to thank Bill Rittenberg, who's a criminal defense attorney specializing in civil rights in New Orleans, Louisiana, and of course a member of the Normal Legal Committee. Bill, thanks for joining us again.
It's
here on the
Stash. Pleasure, Ross.
All right, take it easy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from Robert F. Kennedy, former U.S. Attorney General. Quote, "Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring those ripples build a current that sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance," end quote. Couldn't agree more. Each one of us is just another voice in the roar to end adult marijuana prohibition. Thanks for downloading The Stash. I'm Radical Russ. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.